I'm now going to turn the rest of the service over to Sulima Malzahn. No stranger to WOOF, Sulima's been part of the fellowship since the turn of the century. An active participant, she's worn many hats over the years. By her own admission, her first and maybe fiercest love is poetry. Perhaps, she says, because it takes us so quickly from our heads to our hearts. Today, Sulima invites us to join her in a hopeful celebration of justice as she weaves a tapestry of words from American poets William Stafford and Wendell Berry, along with some of her own. Welcome, Sulima.
Thank you so much for the opportunity to be here this morning and to share with you the fierce love of Wendell Berry and William Stafford, two of my favorite poets. Both of them having somewhat of a reputation for being gentle in their approach to the world. We're going to do what we can to kind of smash that image this morning. Fierce love, people say. What does that mean? You say that a lot. What do you mean by that? Fierce love, to me, is what Dostoevsky called love in action. And he said, love in action is a harsh and dreadful thing compared to love in dreams. I believe this is the kind of love that, when you listen closely, William Stafford and Wendell Berry both put forth in no uncertain terms. Let me just share with you a few words to begin. First, from the farmer. That would be Wendell. Wendell was born in 1934 in Kentucky, and today he lives back in that same state, not far from his birthplace, farming the ground that he loves. He says this in the Agrarian Essays: take care of the earth. The care of the earth is our most ancient and most worthy, and after all, our most pleasing responsibility. To cherish what remains of it and to foster its renewal is our only legitimate hope. William Stafford, as many of you know, was a lifelong conscientious objector. He's a pacifist. He spent the war years, when it was really looked down upon to do anything but be patriotic and go to war, he spent the time in California, in Arkansas, in CO camps, where what they did was to rebuild what was being broken down. He has a poem from that time called Muttered Creed. Here are some excerpts from it. Never again, he says, for any glorious thing, stand in unison or repeat after a leader. Call out friendliness, knock on wood, greet the enemy, fall facing homeward and calling out clearly, forgive. So we're going to talk today, in their words, and as Kim said, in some of my own. This will be probably the first time in all of the times that I have spoken about poetry with you that I'm going to share some of my own work, and I hope you'll bear with me through that. So mostly we're just going to read and take in the poems. So I invite you to relax. Just rest into yourself and listen. This is from William Stafford, called The Dream of Now. When you wake to the dream of now from night and its other dream, you carry day out of the dark like a flame. When spring comes north and flowers unfold from earth and its even sleep, you lift summer on with your breath, lest it be lost ever so deep. Your life you live by the light you find, and follow it on as well as you can, carrying through darkness wherever you go your one little fire that will start again. This is called A Poem on Hope by Wendell Berry. It is hard to have hope. It is harder as you grow old, for hope must not depend on feeling good. And there's the dream of loneliness at absolute midnight. You also have withdrawn belief in the present reality of the future, which surely will surprise us. And hope is harder when it cannot come by prediction any more than by wishing. But stop dithering. The young ask the old to hope. What can you tell them? Tell them at least what you say to yourself. Because we have not made our lives to fit our places, the forests are ruined, the fields eroded, the streams polluted, the mountains overturned. Hope then to belong to your place by your own knowledge of what it is that no other place is, and by your caring for it as you care for no other place. This knowledge cannot be taken from you by power or by wealth. It will stop your ears to the powerful when they ask for your faith, and to the wealthy when they ask for your land and your work. Be still and listen to the voices that belong to the stream banks and the trees and the open fields. Find your hope then on the ground under your feet. Your hope of heaven, let it rest on the ground underfoot. The world is no better than its places. Its places, at last, are no better than their people, while their people continue in them. When the people make dark the light within, the world darkens. So while Berry worries that we have adopted a societal idea of progress that is ultimately destructive, Stafford, during his lifetime, put forth the idea that it was love and forgiveness that would make us whole and strong. Not very different from the words of Martin Luther King, whose birthday we also celebrate this month. But here comes the disclaimer now from Wendell Berry. This is called Warning to My Readers. Do not think me gentle because I speak in praise of gentleness, or elegant because I honor the grace that keeps this world. I am a man as crude as any, gross of speech, intolerant, stubborn, angry, full of fits and furies. That I may have spoken well at times is not natural. A wonder is what it is. And so, are you ready for this one? This is called Manifesto, The Mad Farmers Liberation Front. Love the quick profit. the annual raise, vacation with pay. Want more of everything ready-made. Be afraid to know your neighbors and to die. And you will have a window in your head. Not even your future will be a mystery anymore. Your mind will be punched in a card and shut away in a little drawer. When they want you to buy something, they will call you. When they want you to die for profit, they will let you know. So, friends, every day, do something that won't compute. Love the Lord, love the world, work for nothing. Take all that you have and be poor. Love someone who does not deserve it. Denounce the government and embrace the flag. Hope to live in that free republic for which it stands. Give your approval to all you cannot understand. Praise ignorance, for what man has not encountered, he has not yet destroyed. Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. Call that prophet. Prophesy such returns. Put your faith in that 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts. So long as women do not go cheap for power, please women more than men. Ask yourself, will this satisfy a woman satisfied to bear a child? Will this disturb the sleep of a woman near to giving birth? Go with your love to the fields. Lie down in the shade. Rest your head in her lap. Swear allegiance to what is nighest your thoughts. As soon as the generals and the politicos can predict the motions of your mind, lose it. Leave it as a sign to mark the false trail, the way you didn't go. Be like the fox who makes more tracks than necessary, some in the wrong direction. Practice resurrection. I'm going to read a series now of fairly intense poems. And at the end of that time, we're going to have some quiet time that Avery's going to help us with to just reflect. I'm going to talk about enemies. That's the title, the simple title of Wendell Berry's poem, Enemies. If you are not to become a monster, you must care what they think. If you care what they think, how will you not hate them and so become a monster of the opposite kind? From where, then, is love to come? Love for your enemy, that is the way of liberty. From forgiveness. Forgiven, they go free of you, and you of them. They are to you as sunlight on a green branch. You must not think of them again, except as monsters like yourself, pliable because unforgiving. From Stafford, for the unknown enemy. This monument is for the unknown good in our enemies, like a picture their life began to appear. They gathered at home in the evening and sang. Above their fields, they saw a new sky. A holiday came, and they carried the baby to the park for a party. Sunlight surrounded them. Here we glimpse what our minds long turned away from. The great mutual blindness darkened that sunlight in the park, and the sky that was new in the holidays. This monument says that one afternoon we stood there letting a part of our minds escape. They came back, but different. Enemy, one day we glimpsed your life. This monument is for you. This is a poem I wrote in response to that poem, called Morning at the Edge of a City. In her kitchen, the woman moves silently. She is making soup, accompanied only by her prayers. Her husband was taken 2 weeks ago. Steam rises from the battered pot, exploding a tangled fragrance of cabbage and onions. She quells the turbulent broth by dropping orange discs of carrot through her fingers like prayer beads that have come unstrung. Before dawn, she rose and picked her way carefully toward the place where the garden had been, wondering if there might be sun today to lighten the heavy air. She found much of the garden's bounty still safe beneath chunks of ash. Back home now, the sun rises and makes its way through a broken kitchen window. Since last night, there has been no sound, no guns or screams to disturb the silence of what is unspeakable. Again from Stafford. Entering history. Remember the line in the sand? You were there on the telly, part of the military. You didn't want to give it, but they took your money for those lethal tanks and the bombs. Minorities, they don't have a country, even if they vote. Thanks anyway, the majority says. And you are left there, staring at the sand and the line they drew, calling it a challenge, calling it ours. Where was your money when the tanks grumbled past? Which bombs did you buy for the death rain that fell? Which year's taxes put that fire to the town where the screaming began? An indirect response to that poem, I wrote this one. Where was I when we voted to drop the bombs, to starve the children, to burn the village? Was it one of those years I was preoccupied with getting my taxes paid on time or baking cupcakes so my children's school could have money for art supplies? Or did it happen even longer ago on a Sunday morning while my family sang Onward Christian Soldiers? Was it one of those decades when talking politics or religion made for bad taste at the dinner table and discussions about spending less for what we called defense and more for education were not on the menu. Remember that bulldozer that leveled Rachel Corrie as she stood with her brave hair blowing about her face? Was that bulldozer fueled by my apathy? And in Gaza, on that sunniest of afternoons, when a gentle boy the same age as my grandson sat quietly on a riverbank, was it my silence that bought the bullets that killed him? Where was I when the screaming began? From Wendell Berry. Questionnaire. How much poison are you willing to eat for the success of the free market and global trade? Please name your preferred poisons. For the sake of goodness, how much evil are you willing to do? Fill in the following blanks with the names of your favorite evils and acts of hatred. What sacrifices are you prepared to make for culture and civilization? Please list the monuments, shrines, and works of art that you would most willingly destroy. In the name of patriotism and the flag, how much of our beloved land are you willing to desecrate? List in the following spaces the mountains, rivers, towns, farms you could most readily do without. State briefly the ideas, ideals, or hopes, the energy sources, the kinds of security for which you would kill a child. Name, please, now, the children whom you would be willing to kill. So let us be reminded that we are the people we've been waiting for. It's our turn to practice the fierce love that may be harsh and dreadful, but it will save us. In closing, this from William Stafford. Allegiances. It is time for all the heroes to go home, if they have any. Time for all of us common ones to locate ourselves by the real things we live by. Far to the north, or indeed in any direction, strange mountains and creatures have always lurked. Elves, goblins, trolls, spiders. We encounter them in dread and wonder. But once we have tasted far streams, touched the gold, found some limit beyond the waterfall, a season changes, and we come back, changed but safe, quiet, grateful. Suppose an insane wind holds all the hills while strange beliefs whine at the traveler's ears. We ordinary beings can cling to the earth and love where we are, sturdy for common things. And we won't let you leave without hearing Wendell Berry's very famous, very peaceful, gentle poem called The Peace of Wild Things. When despair grows in me, and I wake in the night at the least sound, in fear of what my life and my children's lives may be, I go and lie down where the wood drake rests in his beauty on the water, and the great heron feeds. I come into the peace of wild things who do not tax their lives with forethought of grief. I come into the presence of still water, and I feel above me the day-blind stars waiting for their light. For a time, I rest in the grace of the world, and I am free. May we all rest in the grace of the world and be free. Thank you so much.